Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for May 7th. This is our post-synod podcast. So, we're going to just follow the Spirit's lead and our hearts.
Yeah, I would say this was harder than, as far as
about what exhaustion, your podcast about?
No, as far as exhaustion level, synod was probably worse than a week, wouldn't you say? Just because the level of work and the number of things going on.
Yeah, well, I didn't do like a lot of childcare for Holy Week. I have nothing.
And it did involve every single aspect of our building and congregational life to be consumed
in making it go. So synod or Holy Week is hard for us because we do a lot of the work. Mm-hmm. People come. But synod is hard because literally everybody does all the work.
and it's good. They can now sympathize with
Holy Week.
Holy Week.
If you're feeling tired this week as a member of Good Shepherd, now you know what we feel like. So you're welcome. I'm glad that you could experience this with us. It went well, objectively. I hear that it went well.
Yeah, people seem glad it went smoothly, and we had a lot of people organizing it who were organized.
Which I feel bad, though. I didn't actually want it to go smoothly because I was really afraid when it was all over that people would say, let's do it here again. But it did go smoothly.
It did.
And I did hear people say,
let's do it again.
It's going to be so great to do this again.
But there's... Who knows what will happen?
I know. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. We could all die. And then there would be no synod. It could be the apocalypse.
Jesus could come back
before synod. So, no, but it was a good thing. And a lot of people had a good time. I myself heard no single talk and attended no worship service because I was with the children who are the future. The children, it's about the children, it's for the children, community. For the community. So
for the children, about
the community. And I think I did, actually, there were people with me who did really know about children and did really lovely things with them, like crafts.
Your description of the event is something like you kind of sat there.
Yeah, I would go up to the childcare place.
And watched everyone else do the work.
Yep. I made sure that all the lists were good and that nobody was eating nuts who were allergic to that. I kept attendance. I communicated with parents. I took babies who were screaming and held them. I sat in the hallway with a really clever little boy who, for 2 hours, knew, and I agreed with him, that he... should not have to be there. He stood in the hallway and we brought books and things out and tried to chat with him, but the word that he knew best was no. So he'd say well, how are you feeling? No. And I felt he was my kindred. So we sat in the hall, but he eventually, I turned my back and went away. And by that point he had reached a time of desperation, and so he did sort of inch past me and go into the snack place, and he ate a lot of food, and then that helped.
It did seem like there were different philosophies of childcare going on from what you described, because your philosophy of childcare is throw bags of chips into the groups of children and read your book.
Yeah, I did. No, well, I'd
read your books and let them fend for themselves. Go back to the state of nature kind of thing. And
yes,
no one dies, then you've done a good job.
Right. The savage, who's the noble savage. That's right. My philosophy of childcare. But one young boy brought a Harry Potter novel. I've never read any. And then he put it down and went to play. So I picked it up and read it for a couple of hours while all the other people were playing with the children. I'm not going to play with the children. That is beyond. But there was this wonderful person who took the children to the gym, which was the loudest. I have a noise allergy, just so everybody knows. I have a noise allergy. She took the children to the loudest place in the center of the world and organized them to play games in the gym.
See, I think this is like...
I watched from outside in a wondering kind of... And she said she had a good time. I assumed that she was lying to me. But I should take people at their word. She wasn't crying. She looked happy.
I think this is one of the casualties of having six children. Is that you never learn, if you have six children, to play with the children because you have six. So they can play with themselves.
Right.
You send them off into the backyard or into the street and say, go play, have a good time, and you don't have to mess
with
them.
That's why I had six children.
Right. I mean, the very purpose of having six children was so that I would not be doing the game thing. Anyway, there was also a really brilliant person who knew how to talk to children. And
we know how to talk to children.
Yeah, but she's really... You say
don't, stop, or be quiet.
She knew how to talk to children in a disarming way that got their guards down and made them think that they were really excited to do whatever it was that she wanted them to do. That was wonderful.
Wow.
No, so my favorite thing about the childcare was the people that were there doing the children with me. And a couple of the children totally charmed me. Actually, a lot of them, they were interesting children. I like to think of children as human people.
Women are human too. Did you know
I
that?
Know, women. I don't know though. Are they human? I've been confused for the last couple of weeks about whether women are human. I didn't know if men were human. I've been making the case for some time on my blog that men are human, and I know that that's questionable. Men shouldn't speak.
Well, because your point has been, you've been making a lot of...
Are we shifting topics here?
I don't know, are we? But you know, in feminist circles, some feminist circles, men are hated so much that they're not really considered human. But wow, I can see why. I mean, I can see why there's anger there.
What? About men being human?
I can see why there's anger in feminist circles, especially feminist circles that are populated by former Christians in maybe the Southern Baptist... or who were raised in...
Yeah, so we stopped thinking about synod and childcare.
I'm sorry, we switched.
And we... In the afterglow of synod, we thought we would listen to the Paige Patterson interview.
Who's Paige Patterson for our listener?
So I think he's a Southern Baptist. I don't think. He is a Southern Baptist.
He is, yes.
What he
he's
is...
He's a high monkey among Southern Baptists. Isn't he the president of... or was he the president of Southern Baptist Convention? Or no, he was Southern Baptist Seminary, one of the main seminaries.
So that's where I... When you say Southern Baptist Convention, that's not like a synod. What is a convention? Is that
it's like their governing body? Right. No,
It's not like the Episcopal General Convention.
It's a little bit like that, but they don't have the same authority structure. So, okay. Yeah.
So, what, is he like Michael Curry then? Or is he like Bonnie Anderson?
I don't think he's that high. I forget his exact position, but he's been prominent there. I think he was formerly the president of the convention.
And now he's at the seminary.
Right.
The seminary in Louisville or the one in Dallas? Or I don't really know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, let's avoid talking about... I just wanted to say he's a high monkey muck in the Southern Baptist convention. And so he's under fire because, well, he apparently, this was in 2000 or 2000?
Yeah, 2000, I think.
Right. He was at a convention talking about complementarianism and was giving examples.
He was asked a question.
Yeah, that's what it was.
What should a woman do? You can go online and listen to it. I guess I'll link it, even though
it's pretty...
It made me want to die listening to it. And so he said that if a woman is being abused in her marriage, she should think about the level of abuse. And she should really rely on prayer. She should pray to God to save her, because isn't going to be able to do anything to help her out, man.
So that was pretty awesome. He was giving an example of a woman who,
and by awesome I mean terrible,
right? A woman who had been physically abused by her husband, a non-believer. Her husband was a non-believer, and his counsel to her was that when he's being
when he's going to sleep at night, she should kneel down by the bed while he's going to sleep and pray for him to be saved. Because, you know, there's nothing, like, that's a weird thing to do anyway. How would you like it if I came in here at night and knelt by the bed and prayed for your salvation? That wouldn't
right. So his make response, you uncomfortable at so all. So his response was to beat her. He gave her two black eyes, right? And so she comes to church the next morning upset with her pastor.
Why would she be upset?
Right. But her pastor didn't apologize, because earlier, apparently, this man had come to him ashamed at what he'd done, and he repented. And
well, he came to church that morning.
And he came forward during the service to receive the Lord. Great. I'm glad he's forgiven. I'm glad they're in. And then Patterson went on to say that this couple went on to have a good marriage. And
I'm just curious, though, what would be the definition of a good marriage?
Yeah, I don't trust that. I don't know what that means.
Like, I wouldn't. Really? I mean, they had a good marriage after that? And he's the judge of whether or not they have a good marriage? Because, you know, one thing I've noticed when people become Christian, it's like an instant fix. Just saying the sinner's prayer literally fixes all of that person's problems, and they don't have any issues after that at all.
Chronically beating your wife to just suddenly being a model husband. I don't buy it.
Being an alcoholic to just suddenly not having that issue anymore.
Right. Right. So when I became a Christian, I smoked a pack and a half a day.
But that's
the next day, I didn't have any desire to smoke. But I also had alcohol issues. I had other issues that I don't want to talk about. And those didn't go away for...
No, it took years.
Right, right.
Years and years and years. So, yeah, color me suspicious about their sudden good marriage.
Right.
So... there's a letter being circulated that people can sign from women.
Can we go back and talk more about this recording first? Because it was what was striking about it is, even before he gave this example, he was talking about other, having known and situations in which women were being abused. Not too badly.
Yeah, that
where he's you know, just counseled them to continue to submit,
Again, though, what does not too badly mean?
I don't know. Being beaten badly means coming to church with swollen black eyes.
You don't call the police at that point. You don't see her on Sunday morning and you call the police. Like, what counts as really bad then? Does she have to be dead on the floor?
To me,
before you call the police, when do you call the police?
He's disqualified himself from the pastoral office if he. That's disqualifying. He's not protecting his people, and revulses me with the idea of a man physically hurting his wife. That's far worse than a wife not submitting to her husband. Far worse, because it's his responsibility to be gentle and kind and Christ-like to his wife. He's the initiator in that, not her.
So the principle of submission, though, overtakes literally all the other words of the Bible.
The most important thing, according to Paige Patterson, is that she just keeps submitting. She's keeping, and that'll win him over.
Win him over to what?
Him
over to?
Look, I can see how when a man is just a jerk, right, and a wife being answering kindly in response, might over time bring a person to the point, hey, this is a different kind of, Christianity's really changed my wife, made her into a forgiving person, and I'm a jerk, so maybe I should take a second look at this. That's a whole different matter than beating. or
even emotional. Like there's certain levels of emotional abuse that I think you should walk away if you're being destroyed in your personhood by the person that you're married to. Like there's just, you know, you may not need to call the police at that point, but there's a lot of reasons to leave. The other thing that really grossed me out was he said, well, there's no circumstances under which divorce would be okay. Like, you having the stuffing beaten out of you isn't cause for you to divorce this man, to have
to me that's abandonment. I mean, you've abandoned, you've utterly betrayed the covenant of marriage. You've abandoned your wife. So she has every right to divorce you, and then she's free at that point to be remarried. You don't have a leg to stand on. It's as if you went and slept with someone else. And this beating of your wife falls under, I believe, the 1 Corinthians 7 category of abandonment. You're no longer her husband. What are you doing? You're her enemy. You're her abuser. You're her. So the idea that you'd counsel any woman to stay in a situation, even if you don't believe in divorce for that, you tell a woman to get out and call the police.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm just like, I'm really stunned. Where does the calling of the police thing come in?
It should be immediate. There should be an immediate. So I think Paige Patterson has lost his qualification to be a pastor, much less a leader in any church, if he lets women be treated that way. But you're saying this is kind of talking about women and.
So we listened to the second clip of the video. He did a sermon, he did a sermon about. It was, I guess, okay. It was on.
We
oh, here's the trash.
We missed the trash. Aww. It came back. It's been a long time since we were doing
here
it.
Here we are, and we have the window open because it's not freezing, snowing. So here we are all together again. What was I saying? Okay, so he's preaching a sermon on Genesis, the creation of women. And in the course of the sermon, he uses as an example a woman coming to him angrily, which he then, there's some other things I wanted to say about the belittling of women, but now they're shouting. We should sing a song or something while the truck is going on. Also, you insist on opening the window at night in your hatred of me.
I thought you liked the fresh air and the cool
and
breeze.
Then you turn the fan directly on my face so that I wake up with.
How long does it take for the trash truck to go?
It takes a really long time to get all of it, gather it all. And of course, we don't have any outside of our house, because we haven't done any yard work. So it stopped just in front of us to gather all of our neighbor's yard waste, which there wasn't any of, because it rained. And so we did not spend time in the garden. I completely lost my train of thought.
We were going to talk about the video.
There was something else that I wanted to say about the interview thing, but I can't remember what it was. So the video, he's preaching about Genesis 2, the creation of women, and he's saying that it's a good thing. And the word used for the creation of woman is built, apparently, in Hebrew. And I don't know if that's true or not.
I didn't look it up, but that's what he was saying.
So he was saying, you know, you're building something good, woman is being built.
It's not the same word that's used referring to God's making man from the dust.
It's a different word. And so his example was to talk about how, you know, a teenage girl walks by after church, and these teenage boys,
16 years old,
the 16-year-old girl, I guess we'll call her a woman because that's fine. Let's have child marriage. My gosh, what are they doing? They're like grinding up yard waste that we don't have and putting it in their truck, and our window is wide open. This is such a special time. This is a metaphor. So, you know what? They process the yard waste. They don't pick it up and take it somewhere else.
They stop in front of us.
They process the waste, the organic matter, as it were, right outside. What is the carbon footprint on these trucks out here? And how many of them are there? There's like 50 of them out there. Now they're cutting down a tree. Literally.
Hold on, I'm gonna go close the window. Keep talking about.
I'm not sure what to talk about. I can't talk about Paige Patterson because it's too hard. So what's going on? I'll relay it. Maybe they're gonna drive away now. And the squeak of the window. So the two marks of our good podcast, our regularity and our banter, are really undone by our sound quality. All right, the windows are closed. Wow. What were we talking about?
We were going to talk about the video, and she was mentioning it, the 16-year-old girl walking by the teenage boys while the mother was talking to him about something that she was upset about.
Okay, she was upset that her son was being encouraged to objectify women. And look at them as if they were objects. And instead of being on her side about her child and agreeing with her and bolstering her authority as a mother,
well,
Paige
the
Patterson
wait,
let me finish my sentence. Paige Patterson undermines her parental authority, objectifies the girl himself, and...
Well, can you're getting the sequence wrong. Like, as this mother's talking to him, then that 16-year-old girl walks by. And Paige Patterson says, she's built.
Oh, yeah, so he says it.
Right. He didn't say it to the mother. So he's in this sermon, he's noticing that this woman is really good-looking, right? The 16-year-old is really good-looking. And he's saying this publicly at either at his church or at a conference. Now, just imagine,
I definitely want to go there with my 16-year-old daughter.
Yeah,
now.
Do you want your pastor preaching, mentioning that he notices how wonderfully looking 16-year-olds are? That's not something I would personally want in my, to know that my pastor is ogling my, 16-year-old. Or if I were a 16-year-old, I wouldn't want to know that my pastor is ogling me. I would. That would be inappropriate.
It's not ogling. Yeah. It's just that he's appreciating beauty.
Yeah, well,
which is fine because later when
she's I don't care how old she is, really. I mean, I don't. It shouldn't be a practice of any pastor to notice to make comments on the attractiveness of women in his congregation to whom they're not married. If I'm not married to a woman in my congregation, I don't think I should be talking about her looks. And in public, or even in private, I shouldn't be thinking about the looks of women in my congregation. That's just not. Where does that come from? Why should I be doing that? Why should anybody be doing that? But anyway, the 16-year-old walks by, and he says, the boys look at her, and one of them whispers to the other, she's stacked or something like that, or built or something. And the mother slaps the boy, her son. And what does Paige say?
He rebukes the mother. That's what I was saying. He rebukes the mother in front of the child and tells the mother that that's actually an illustration of his sermon, that this good-looking woman, child, confirms the substance of his sermon. And so she shouldn't be upset about it. So her inclination to have her son respect women and treat them respectfully is in contradiction to the text of the Bible. That's what he's saying to the mother. And then he says this to his congregation, yeah. Like he's the hero of the story and he's awesome.
Yeah. Well, he thinks it's funny too. He's like making a joke out of it. Like, ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
The boy was getting the Bible right. That's all he was doing.
So,
Do you have any?
I had a lot of things to say, but you totally interrupted me, and I can't remember what they are. I was saying some things, but well, I can't but remember
the
what they are.
I just want to make sure you got the secret to the story right. You didn't get the secret to the story right.
Okay, well, I'm sorry.
So now,
I don't deserve my humanity now. So, I'm largely too fatigued to put my finger on the problem of this, but when I hear the word complementarian, this is what I hear. And I think that's a sort of a problem in the Christian world across denominational lines, because I don't think the Presbyterians and Anglicans, when they hear the word complementarian, they're hearing something very different than a lot of people are hearing, including me. And that's when I, because this guy in this sermon and this clip isn't that unusual. It's not universal, of course, but it's not that unusual. Like I think there's this subtle, the idea that a woman in her marriage or a young girl in the way that she dresses is her responsibility. That's the spirituality of the man and his salvation and his sanctification is all her problem. Like, it's all her job to make sure that he's saved, that he's not sinning, that he's being properly upheld. So in the clip, what was it? She in the Q&A, she needed to make sure that he was being honored. Mm-hmm. More than anything else. As long as he's properly honored, then everything's okay.
That,
in the world.
That principle of female submissions is like right up there with like the atonement and
so in the Episcopalian world, love, a cultural expression of love, which is total inclusion and you can't say anything about it, that trumps every other reading of the Bible. So your definition of love as inclusive and that overtakes everything and the rest of the Bible is complete. But in this case, the woman's submission to the man trumps all the other portions of the scripture.
Well, if what you hear, or if what is actually understood by complementarianism is that culture that you're talking about, and Paige Patterson is a representation of complementarian, then I don't want to be associated with that word at all. I can see why.
That's why I think the word is really problematic. I think it's a problematic word, and I think this came down to the when we were trying to talk about the Council on Biblical Manhood and Biblical Womanhood, you were reading a statement that had a lot of biblical words and you were fine with them.
Well,
the content is
it
fine.
Wasn't just the words, it was the idea I thought was okay, well this is accurate.
But when I read that statement, I literally could hear this guy's voice reverberating in my head, and I hated the very name of the of their thing that they're doing. And one thing I've been able to understand is why you need a council on biblical manhood and biblical womanhood. And this is, I think it comes down to the question of whether anybody is human or not.
Well, okay, so I think...
And I don't think women are human in some sense in this kind of realm. Women aren't, they are infants. Oh, that's what it was. I remember in the clip, in the Q&A. The woman comes to him and she's being abused by her husband. And he says, well, you need to rely on the power of prayer, because when you go to prayer, to God in prayer, he's just like you're a parent, and when your child comes running to you and he's scraped his knee and he's really sad, you comfort that child. In other words, he likened a woman being beaten by her husband to a child crying over a scraped knee.
Right.
That posture, that putting, that thinking of women in that way, a childish way, is pervasive. It's deeply embedded in the way that women are considered and talked about. And so if you read the statement from the Council of biblical manhood and biblical womanhood with that voice reverberating in your head.
Yeah,
you're not going to be able to hear any of the words of the Bible. You can't. You don't even know what they're talking about. All you hear is that women are children, but at the same time, contradictorily, they're responsible for the spiritual salvation of all the men everywhere. And he's vaguely Muslim.
Well, like, he's kind of what we were saying last week a little bit. You know, I do see. So when I heard the biblical counsel on man and womanhood, I do think it's important for men to learn how to be men, because it's something that we're not, you know, you're raised in public school, being a man is an evil thing. And but I guess the application of what, or I guess how they're defining manhood is where I get, if manhood has anything to do with anything, it's you're protecting the weak and being kind and providing for your family, not beating your wife or telling her what to do, or or you know, I do think that headship is a biblical concept, but that the reason you're the head is so that you can die, is so you can sacrifice yourself for the good of everyone else around you. It's not so that you can call the shots. And I think it was here, when the people hear, in these circles you're talking about, hear about headship, they're thinking, I got to be a leader. I got to tell people what to do.
No way you start doing the voice, because there's
Heard the voice. I've heard that voice. I've got, you know, my wife's not doing what I tell her to do. She's not submitting to me. I'm not sure what's can you tell my wife to submit to me?
The point of biblical manhood is to to be served by your wife, who isn't really human, to have your children clustering around you and telling you how awesome you are, to maybe go hunting and fishing and to have your lunch served up on time. And that's the definition of manliness.
Right. It's culturally defined and so weirdly defined as dominance and masculinity is shaped by American culture so much so that it's not the biblical counsel on manhood and womanhood. It's the American weird warped application of these principles to our culture.
I was going to say something else, but I forgot what it was. I keep forgetting. I can't keep it straight. I'm too tired. This is why this was a really important topic for us to consider today. Of course, he did this. This all came up this week.
So we had to talk about
it. We have to talk about it so that we're relevant, and that keeps one of our marks, the 9 marks of a healthy podcast.
Relevance.
Sound quality, coherence. It totally escaped me what I wanted to say. So I think that women should be human. I'm going to go ahead and say it, that they shouldn't be infantilized. And I also think the point of the Bible isn't to, this is what it is. So in the Paige Patterson worldview, it's really important that women know their place. It is so important that you know your place and you keep to it. And if you get out of your place, then you have violated the manhood of other people. And so it's just jolly important. And you need. And if we're going to spend sermon time making sure that you understand and know your place. And that's really not the point of the Bible. Like, that's not what the text means. Ephesians 5 isn't about
women keeping their places.
Everybody knowing their place. And the man's place is like God, not like Christ being God and dying, but like
emptying himself.
God being on the throne and getting what's due to him, and everybody else understanding that they where they are, which I find just vaguely, like, not even all Islam, just sort of Middle Eastern Islam. It's not Christian.
No, it's not.
Anytime I see somebody putting somebody else in their place. So women putting men in their place. Men putting women in their place. It makes me shudder in a deep way.
Yeah, it's right, because Ephesians 5 doesn't say, husbands, you know, be sure your wives submit to you. It says, wives, submit to your husband. And it doesn't, it's not a command to husbands to do anything except for love their wives like Jesus loved the church. And so I'm not sure why, I'm not sure why a husband would have any call to try to force any kind of submission on his wife at all. That's her making that decision to serve Christ in that way, not.
It's also really like the very idea or prospect of submission, I think, is so culturally expressed in a negative way, because it means, in this world, Paige Patterson worldview, it means praying and keeping silent. Yeah. And that's not biblical either. That's not what the woman is called to do. That's not how she's supposed to be. She's not supposed to pray and keep silent and not speak and have no personhood and no personality. But that's what she's, that's what he's, you know, she's an infant and
she has no contribution to make
to the life of the church or the marriage.
Except for the babies and the cleaning and the,
yeah.
It's really grotesque. I had a person yesterday say, you know, one of the reasons that she's willing to volunteer at Good Shepherd is because she noted, you know, she kind of grew up in a church where women, well, you were in the nursery or you're teaching, now you're
maybe Sunday school.
Sunday school or you're cleaning, right? So those are the options available for you as a woman in the church. And anything beyond that, well, you were getting beyond yourself.
Riches.
Right, which is stupid because, I mean, this woman's in a PhD program. She's brilliant.
She's an intellectual.
Yeah. So what are you doing? Why wouldn't you use that? Why don't you want someone like that to be?
It's like making me go in and be in the nursery, which I voluntarily submitted myself to the nursery or the childcare, but I'm not actually, there's a lot of women who aren't very good with children and shouldn't have to be with them ever because it potentially undermines the personhood of the children. Well, and there's a lot of men who ought to be cooking because they're better at it than their wives.
Right.
Like that, yeah.
We've told that story many times about the couple, but the husband was better at doing what women traditionally do, and the wife was better at doing what men traditionally do, but they couldn't do it.
Because of the Bible.
Right. Which is ridiculous.
So.
We're so tired.
I don't know.
We're not completing sentences. We're not.
I think we should stop.
Right.
And maybe we can come back to this topic, but.
Yeah.
Maybe Paige Patterson will go away and then we won't have to talk about it anymore.
Right.
We're not even Southern Baptist. So I feel comfortable talking about other people's denominations. I think it's good for us to do that.
We are on a, I guess, a positive note. We had Ashley Noel preach at our church yesterday, which was really nice.
Yeah.
Ashley Noel's a really good scholar, and
of course he's not a woman, so it makes it okay. All of his scholarship is valid,
right?
In a way that it wouldn't be
if he were a woman.
If he were a woman, we should have second tier, like first tier in the academy.
Right. Right.
Just make sure that everybody knows their place. Exactly.
You should link that video too. Women.
Know your limits. Look at these venomous habitants.
Hagedans. Yeah, I know the right word.
They're only 20 years old. They look like they're 100. That's what happens when you're a woman and you study and think thoughts. So, I mean, I think we'll be back next week. Will we be back next week?
Yeah, yeah. We should probably
end
this while it's...
While it's really deep. And until then, try not to be a bad person. Just try to be a person.